Fran fam, what's going on? Listen, before we start this podcast episode, I have a very, very small favor to ask of each and every single one of you guys. I appreciate the support that all of you have been showing for the podcast up until this point, but we want to try and get these episodes out to as many people as possible. And how we do that on the audio side is by leaving a review and dropping a 5-star rating. So if you've been a consistent listener of the pod, please, before we get this episode started, it only takes a couple of seconds, leave a review. It could be a 2-word, 3-word, 4-word review, or just leave a rating. Do something to get the word out so that we can get the Marvin Francois Show to more listeners moving forward. Outside of that, love you guys, appreciate the support, but without further ado, let's get into this episode.
You really build wealth through the things that you do slowly over time, right? I think in our community, we're so used to instant gratification that, you know, we're looking for the next big thing. We feel like it's something that has to happen super quickly.
Yeah.
But because I was managing like multi-billion dollar retirement accounts for some of the largest corporations in the world, I saw everyday people have 6 and 7 figures in their account. And these are, you know, people that work for Home Depot or Walmart or, you know, really any company that we were managing funds for, but these were everyday people with a job. In this day and age where everyone pushes entrepreneurship as like the only way to build wealth, I have to say that couldn't be further from the truth, because wealth is really built by the small things that you do consistently over time.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Marvin Francois Show, your number one source for all things business, finance, and investing. And today, is a very special day because our guest today is a mother, entrepreneur, investor, mentor, public speaker, author, financial strategist, wealth educator, and money maven extraordinaire. She's the creator of the Money Maven Club, a platform built to transform high achievers into confident investors through financial literacy, an empowering community, and proven wealth strategies that challenge the way you think about wealth today so that you can set the foundation for generations of tomorrow. From humble beginnings in Trenton, New Jersey, to managing multi-million dollar portfolios on Wall Street by the age of 19, her journey is proof that your current situation is not your final destination. And whether she's walking entrepreneurs through trust, tax strategy, and legacy planning, or building the pages of Black Wealth Weekly to amplify the stories, strategies, and success of the wealth builders in our community, her mission remains the same: to reframe the way that we think about, build, and protect wealth, because generational success isn't just a possibility, it's a responsibility. And today, she's here to do more of the same. Ladies and gentlemen, from Trenton, New Jersey, by way of Atlanta, Georgia, I'm here with the one, the only, my good friend, Dr. Shaniqua Nicole. What's going on, family? How are you?
Wow, that was amazing. Thank you so much, Marvin. Can we go on tour?
Of course you can go on tour.
Can I bring you on tour with that? I need you to introduce me every time.
I got you. An incredible intro for an even more incredible individual. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm amazing. Good. Yes, how are you?
I'm better now that I'm with you. I'm very excited for the sit down. We had to move mountains to get you on here.
Don't do that.
We had to fight lions, tigers, and bears, but by the grace of the Almighty, we finally made it happen. And I think it's going to be a very fruitful conversation. Very excited for us to get into it. But before we do, for those who are unfamiliar, I want to get them familiar with the incredible woman that's sitting on the couch. So for those who don't know, who exactly is Dr. Shaniqua Nicole?
Yeah, I mean, you gave a super dope summary of who I am. I didn't even know you knew that much about me. So shout out to you for that. But like you said, I'm a mom, a business owner, and, you know, really just a financial activist. Like, I learned about business probably when I think I became an entrepreneur when I was like 6 years old. Like, that was my first entrepreneurial type of, experiment. And I just fell in love with it. And have been growing in that space ever since 6. So it's, it's been like 30 years that I've been doing this thing here.
That's remarkable. let's unpack that and go back a bit, right? What did life look like for you before the successful woman that we see sitting on this couch here?
Yeah. So I'm from super humble beginnings. Like you mentioned, I'm from Trenton, New Jersey. So that's the capital. So what's up, Trenton? Trenton makes the world takes. But super humble beginnings. I'm the oldest of 8 siblings.
Okay.
My parents were teenagers when they had me. So, every metric of failure, right, possible was there for me, my family, my mom, my dad. So, blessed to be able to have grown through that. But being the eldest of 8 siblings, it was So I didn't. What I always say is I didn't realize that we were poor because we were rich in love, right? But grew up in public housing. But as soon as my mom could, we, you know, lived in nicer neighborhoods. And my mom actually worked on Wall Street. So I think she had a big influence on my desire to go and work on Wall Street. And yeah, like I said, just had a lot of love. And so I've always operated from that space.
Yep.
And that's been, you know, really good for me.
What did growing up, because eight siblings, I mean, well, seven, because it's you're,
yeah,
you make eight.
Yeah, I make eight.
Got you. So you make eight. So that's a lot of elbows bumping and individuals running around all in the same house. What did growing up in that environment early on start to teach you about money and hustle that maybe you didn't realize then, but you retrospectively, you look back now and you think of?
That's a great question. So money was always around, right? And you know, and so in my household, I was with my mom. So my mom had four children. My dad has four children. Of course, I make, you know, I'm the common, so I make eight. So growing up with my mom as a single mom, she married later in life when I was maybe later in my teenage years. But growing up with a single mom who's a teenager, right? Like she's a child herself. We did a lot of growing up together. You know, for me, it was just natural to be a leader. It was natural for me to be creative. It was natural for me to make decisions. Mm-hmm. It was natural for me to, you know, care, right? Like take care of my younger siblings. And so I showed up in every environment that same way. And, you know, like I said, because I come from a family where love was all around, because there were a lot of kids, too. So not only did I have a lot of siblings, I also grew up with a lot of cousins. So I love that because, you know, it was just kids. Like we were literally, you know, in the neighborhood. And back in these days, we actually played outside. So we weren't like in the house on the game. So it was so much fun because I think that, you know, we as children had our own little world that was like real. And, you know, you really learned your place in society early on because you had these social interactions in person.
Yeah.
So, you know, always knew that I was a little different.
Right.
But I just embraced it and was just always able to be myself.
So let's now take that with, you mentioned a little bit earlier that your mother started working on Wall Street. Dive a little bit more into that. Was that your slow introduction into just the world of investing and finance?
So my mom and dad were both very entrepreneurial, always entrepreneurial, always like hustlers, right? But their dream for me was to go to college because they didn't, right? So I'm first graduate, college graduate in the family. And so their dream for me was to go to college, get a good job. And so that was really my main focus, right? Because this is what my parents told me that I need to be doing. But they were very entrepreneurial. So my mom, she had great ideas. Like, she had this notebook full of ideas, and she still has it to this day. And I tell her, you cannot die with 1,000 ideas in this notebook. You will be doing a disservice to yourself and to our whole family if you don't, you know, move forward with some of these things that you have written down. But like she used to sell these teddy bears where she would bring, she would decorate it for like 4th of July or Valentine's Day and make these packages. So she like created Build-A-Bear before Build-A-Bear was even a Build-A-Bear. She also used to do this super creative thing with wig, where she had like a hat and then she would put weave on the hat. And so nowadays they have these creative things. And I'm like, we are such geniuses. Black people are such geniuses. But most times we're so distracted by our life struggles, by our responsibility, that we don't really get the opportunity to create. So I appreciate the way that I grew up and my parents, because I had my grandmother. So my grandmother was super important for me because I would go to my grandmother's house and I was just like her shining joy, right? She had two boys, I'm a girl, and she was just super excited to have a little doll baby. But this was my place where I could go and just relax. I didn't have to take care of my siblings. I didn't have anyone over there. And probably the first place where I remember money being like around all the time, because my dad was also, a, you know, like a hustler, but he had a laundromat. Mm-hmm. He had a car wash, which he still has. And so there was like always coins around. And so I remember me and my grandma would be rolling quarters all the time. And then, you know, I would go to school and I have all this money. I got a pocket full of quarters. And so in school and to my friends, I'm like this kid that just always has money. We go to the corner store. I'm treating everybody. So, yeah, I would say, you know, that's kind of where my start to into money came mm-hmm. from. Now, when it comes to investing, I don't know. I didn't learn about investing until I actually got on Wall Street. Mm. Yeah, I didn't learn about actually investing until I got on Wall Street. But at 19, I started working at Merrill Lynch. Mm-hmm. And I had to make this decision because it was like, do I either go to college full time or do I work this job, which I thought was supposed to be just like a little summer internship. Mm-hmm. That's what it started out as. But my manager really loved me. And he was like, you know, whatever you need me to do, I'll help you. I want you to go to college. So I want you to still be able to do that. And so this, you know, 20 years ago, I worked from home 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. So my manager was super flexible in allowing me to be able to go to college and still work and get the experience of Wall Street. And the first thing that he taught me was pay yourself first. So that was kind of like my first intro into investing. Mm. I had this manager on Wall Street, young white guy, and, you know, he just took a liking to me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, been growing from there ever since.
So we go from the young black girl that's walking around in school with a like 80 quarters just jingling around in her pocket to watching, like, it seems like the seeds of just money and investing in entrepreneurship were planted early, watching your father and some of the ventures he had, watching your mother and some of her creative ideas come to life. And then now fast forward, you know, those seeds continue to get planted once you end up working at Merrill Lynch, where now, I mean, you already introduced to money, but now this is money on an entirely different level.
Absolutely.
You talked about one of the first lessons being that you learned being pay yourself first. What are some of the other, I would say, money mindset shifts that started to happen being in that environment where you're around, you know, multi-million dollar, potentially multi-billion dollar conversations?
Yeah. No, that's a great question. So that first shift was definitely pay yourself first. And what I didn't know what it meant, right? Initially, I didn't know what pay yourself first meant.
Yeah.
But I learned, and what I put into action was I started investing in my 401k mm-hmm. from day one. Right. So 20% I was putting of my paycheck into my 401k. And so as I climbed up in salary and, you know, I didn't increase my lifestyle as I was increasing my salary. Right. Yeah. And so I started to learn how to invest really, really early on. Also learned that, you know, you really build wealth through the things that you do slowly over time. Right. Mm. I think in our community, we're so used to instant gratification that, you know, we're looking for the next big thing. We feel like it's something that has to happen super quickly.
Yeah.
But because I was managing like multi-billion dollar retirement accounts for some of the largest corporations in the world, I saw everyday people have six or seven figures in their account. And these are, you know, people that work for Home Depot or Walmart or, you know, really any company that we were managing funds for. But these were everyday people with a job. Right. So in this day and age where everyone pushes entrepreneurship as like the only way to build wealth, mm-hmm. I have to say that couldn't be further from the truth, because wealth is really built by the small things that you do consistently over time.
Mm, well, you just said so much there. I'm trying to figure out where I even begin. OK, so let's take a step back so we can take a step forward. Right. Because you said something key where you said a lot of people are chasing wealth, and there's just a lot of misconceptions that exist there. One of them being that a lot of people think they need to get it through entrepreneurship, but you're looking into accounts of people who are just regular everyday people that are probably doing better than some entrepreneurs, right? How do I know what side of the fence that I fall on, whether, okay, I'm a business owner and this is how I'm going to build wealth for my family, or no, I'm a regular 9-to-5 blue collar, white collar worker, and I'm gonna find my own lane there. How do I differentiate between the two?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think personal finance is personal. So everyone has to look at their own life and not look at what they perceive of other people online, right? Mm-hmm. Today is a crazy time because we get access to so many people's lives on the internet, and you know, not really understanding that this is a curation of marketing. Right. And so if you're an impressionable person that don't understand that, you know, someone's what they share on their feed is curated, mm-hmm. then you can be highly impressionable. And we've seen this in hip hop. Right.
Yeah.
Let's just go back to when people were wearing baggy clothes and big chains.
Mm-hmm.
All of our youth wanted to wear baggy clothes and big chains. And so now that any person can be a celebrity and have a cult like following, you know, we have to be careful as those people of the lessons that we teach, because it you know, personal finance is super personal. So what wealth looks like for me might not be what wealth looks like for you. And so that is the first place that I start is, you know, people need to figure out what does really financial freedom look like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what would it look like for you to actually make an extra $20,000 in a year, right? Mm-hmm. How can I make $2,000 additional a month so that way I can start investing $24,000 a year?
Mm-hmm.
You do that over 5 years, you've now have six figures in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Most entrepreneurs are running on E every other month because payroll.
You too loud. You're going to hurt somebody's feelings. You got to be careful. I'm sorry. Keep going.
No, I'm just saying that, you know, there. You don't have to choose, right? I do feel like entrepreneurship can help accelerate your wealth building journey because you have more control, there's more flexibility, and there is more potential, right?
Yeah.
Those things are uncapped, but you don't necessarily have to be an entrepreneur. You can go and work a job, make $80,000. And this is a thing I would like for you guys to do out there, right? If you believe that you are worth more than $1 per hour, I want you to go through this exercise and tell me in the comments if you actually have lived by this for your life. So how many years have you been working? We're going to take that number. So how many years have you been working?
I'm 28. Like,
you're 28?
Well, don't do that. Don't expose me on the podcast. Don't do this on the podcast. Not on the podcast. Yes. All right.
Oh,
so, okay.
Gosh,
wait a minute.
I love this.
Okay. So 28. Now, when you say working in terms of, I guess, like, officially, probably from when I was like 17. So I'm like, right, 11 years now.
Yeah, so let's just say you've been working for 10 years,
yeah.
Right? So you've been working for 10 years. So if you've been working for 10 years, 40 hours a week,
mm-hmm.
So 40 hours a week times 4 weeks a month is what, 160?
I was never
doing okay, that. And then let's just say 160 times 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just call that, I don't know.
That's 1,920.
1,920?
Yeah.
Okay, times 40 hours.
Wait, I'm all right.
1,940 times 40 hours. That's
Here we go. That's 76,800.
76,800. So that is how many hours that you've worked
mm-hmm.
in the last 10 years.
Okay.
Right? Do you at least have that amount of money?
Oh my goodness.
In the bank.
That's a good exercise. Okay.
Because if you don't, that tells me that you don't believe that you're worth more than a dollar an hour.
Mm.
And so, you know, when I ask people that question, they'll say, oh, of course, I you know, you got to pay me $50 an hour. You got to pay me $30 an hour. Mm-hmm. Right. But you haven't even proven to yourself that you believe that you're worth more mm-hmm. than $1 an hour because you don't have at least that number in the bank.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there are many ways to go about building wealth. And I do think entrepreneurship can be like an accelerant to that. But I do strongly also believe that, you know, working a corporate job is a great start because your job is going to give you structure. And what I've seen is for successful entrepreneurs, they were typically great employees first.
Mm-hmm.
Most successful entrepreneurs were great employees. They learned systems, they learned structure, and they were always standout people.
Yeah.
And then when they moved into entrepreneurship, that carried along with them. But for me personally, you know, when I was working on Wall Street, I sat next to a woman who had about five children, and we were doing the same job. And I was just like, this can't be,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know how she can make it off of this salary because I was, you know, I had my own apartment, going to college and traveling and, you know, doing all the things and mostly providing for myself, even though I'm only 19, because my parents were still, you know, figuring their life out as well. But, you know, happily doing it, especially had what I thought was my dream job on Wall Street. But I knew that I couldn't be this woman in 10 years with four kids and sitting doing a job like this. And so that's really what sparked me to start my tax business at that time. So I started my tax business while I was working. And so I side hustled that thing for 10 years. And now it's been almost 20 years that I've been in this space.
I want to dive more into the tax business side, but I want to go back to something you said when you talked about social media. I think it's we're in such an interesting time because social media almost acts as a double-edged sword, especially for what you teach around wealth building. On one hand, there's never been more access to more information and resources and tools. Like, there are people who are from all across the country who know about you that otherwise wouldn't have known about you if it had not been for social media. And as a result, you've been able to transform lives and impact people and put them in positions that they never dreamed of, right? But the other side of the coin is that the misinformation, like you just talked about, that's being put out, to where you have people that think, if I've been in business for 1 year and I am not making $1 million, then something is horribly wrong. Or there has to be an investing strategy where I'm going to take this $2,000, put it into something for 3 months, and I'm going to get a $500,000 return. And what happens is, more often than not, because of this image, these dreams that are being sold on social, you have people that have actually set themselves back because they've been trying to chase the long-term thing in a short-term time period, right? And I'm sure you've seen all the horror. I've heard some crazy stories, right? Where it's just like, if you just took the time it actually took, if you dedicated 5 years, 7 years, the 10 years that it actually took to build the thing or to get to the place, it's darn near guaranteed.
Absolutely. And the truth is that, you know, especially on social media, people look at you and think that you were like an overnight success, right? Mm-hmm. So if we're on social media and we're saying, hey, I had a 20K day, I had a 100K day, I had a $1 million day.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh my God.
Yep.
Right? This person did this in one day. Mm-hmm. Right? So we crunch the time frame on social media into this 30 seconds. So it seems quick. Mm-hmm. But what looked like an overnight success was 10 years in the making.
Yeah.
Like and it took time. It took money. It took patience. It took systems. Mm-hmm. So that's what I teach, is I teach people how to build a framework around their money so that they can build that system, because that's really what you need to build wealth, is a system.
And another thing, and once again, you and I both know this about entrepreneurship too, and this is no shade or no slight to anyone in the space, but like, when you hear these numbers get thrown around, like, you're always going to hear gross. You're never going to hear profit. You're going to hear individuals who say, like, I made X amount in a day. And they, granted, for most of them, they have made that, but they're not going to tell you about payroll. They're not going to tell you about marketing.
Right.
Which is eating the most of that. They're not going to tell you about chargebacks.
Well, I'm an accountant, okay?
So you see
I see the back end.
Yeah. So you see the back end. You're like, well, on Instagram, it's almost
and
like
I know the back end.
Right.
But I also do know that it works, right? So, like, the things that a lot of our friends teach, it works, right? Yes. And the systems do work.
Yep.
And, you know, but I tell people, especially when they're new getting into business, new getting into investing, you're not going to hit a home run, right? But if you're not going to hit a home run the first time. And if you don't, it's okay.
Yep.
And guess what? In order for you to, you know, make $1 million, you have to first be comfortable losing six figures. You want to make seven figures, you have to be comfortable losing six figures.
Yep.
And so you haven't even built the tenacity to even hold six figures in your bank account yet. And you think that you can have the capacity to hold seven figures?
You don't even know.
You don't even know. No. Like, you haven't taken enough losses to even hold the capacity to be able to invest. A person that makes $1 million in a day, in any bit, well, especially in this digital marketing space and this online business, they've probably spent at least $300,000 to $500,000 in marketing to make their $1 million.
Yep.
Whether they make that in a day, whether they make that in a year or a month, they've spent 30 to 50%. Now, typically, payroll is probably about 20%.
Yep.
So let's say they spent 50% on marketing, 20% on payroll and operations. That's 70%. Mm-hmm. If they're doing it right, you should be putting 20% away for taxes. They're left with 10%. Mm-hmm. So you made $1 million, but you profited $100,000. Mm-hmm. We're equal. Mm-hmm. If I made $100,000 and I didn't have any expenses.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is, you know, the internet can be a tricky place because people don't really understand the mechanics of money and business and marketing. But, you know, it's real. Like, we've seen the numbers.
Yeah.
But it's like, I work with a lot of high income earners.
Yeah.
But that does not mean that they are building wealth, you know, especially when your profit margins are 10% or below. and you're not properly investing, mm-hmm. right? So what I like to tell people is that you need to have your money system in place so that when this business does blow, when, you know, when you do have your $100,000 day, you already know, okay, 20% is going into my investment account. 20% is going over here to taxes. Because if you make $1 million and it comes time for tax season and you are in a state where maybe you owe almost 50% in taxes, mm-hmm. do you have $500,000 to pay taxes? Mm-hmm. No, you don't. And we'll get into some conversations about what it looks like when you don't properly pay your taxes. But we can just pause there.
Well, the conversation is you're going to jail. that's the conversation.
Definitely losing freedom. So freedom, you know, and I've never seen this. I'm working with a client right now.
Yeah.
Owes the IRS about $300,000. And
let me just stop. Let's let that breathe. How much?
$300,000. Owes the IRS $300,000. U.S. dollars.
Okay, go ahead, finish the story.
So these are, you know, there are risks to mm-hmm. earning money. And let me tell you what this has done to him mentally, right? Had a great year, had a few great years, and wasn't properly planning, wasn't mm-hmm. properly structured. And now that he owes this big amount of money to the IRS, even though he's still earning great money, he's scared to grow. He's scared to scale because he has all of this fear around, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I know I need to handle this. I know I need to do this.
Yep.
I don't even want to make any more money until I do this.
Yeah.
So it can really get in the way of your growth if you're not properly structured first.
Yeah.
You know, people think that you only hire advisors once you have all the money, and that just couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah. And I think that's another to that point as well. We'll dive a bit more into it. But it's just, I think it's another thing that I don't think should deter people from wanting to grow. Everyone should want to grow. Whether you're a business investor, that's what we do it for. But there's a beauty in scaling slow or getting to where you're trying to get to slow, because there's a work that's taking place right now that you may not realize until you get there and like, oh, I'm happy I didn't make my first million or 10 million or however much as fast as I wanted to, because had I gotten there, I would have ended up with a crazy tax bill. I would have lost X amount. Even for me, like when I first got in business, as young as I was like, man, I'm trying to make my first million within my first 1 to 2 years. Now looking back, I'm like, if that dude got that money, I wouldn't be sitting here with you. I'd probably have the $300,000.
You'd be stressed.
Stressed,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But most people want to skip the steps necessary.
Right.
It's more about who you become than the money you make, because if you don't become the person that's needed to keep the money, hey, it's going out the door.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, that client in particular, you know, this is the first time I've seen this, but they, you know, like you said, if you don't properly pay your taxes, you could potentially go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
We just found out they took away his passport. So can you imagine being high earning, high income? You're so used to freedom. We do this for the freedom. And you can't even leave the country? So I want to, you know, caution all Americans, all high income earners, especially entrepreneurs that, you know, aren't paying quarterly taxes on some kind of frequently basis. Get your affairs in order, which include paying your taxes quarterly, but also hedging against some of the risk that this country of America, this business of America will try and keep you in, right? So I've been looking at, you know, business internationally, other citizenships and things of that nature to hedge some of that risk,
mm-hmm.
You know, and like you said, it comes with knowledge, it comes with growing, it comes with having the resources and the people around you to help educate you in those spaces.
One of the things, obviously, you talked about your background from Merrill Lynch and your transition into entrepreneurship. I think when most people think about just building wealth, it seems like this far gone, out of the universe thing that seems so difficult to get, that I need to be making X amount of money before I can even position myself to start looking into certain strategies and resources that set the foundation today
mm-hmm.
for me to, you know, essentially be in that wealth building conversation for tomorrow. For the everyday person that's watching this, whether I'm just getting started in business or I'm just getting started in my investing journey, from your experience, what are some of the best strategies that they should be looking into to start setting that wealth building foundation for themselves?
Yeah. So definitely paying yourself first, right? Mm-hmm. I would have to agree with my first boss that you have to get comfortable consistently putting money away. Mm. And you do that. I tell my kids this. If you save your money now, your money will save you later.
Yep.
You don't need to have a job for it right away, but eventually you will. Mm-hmm. And this is one thing that the wealthy do is that they give their they give jobs to their money.
Yeah.
Right. So I have accounts that's like vacation account. I have college fund account. I have my travel account. I have my taxes account. So definitely pay yourself first. Identify what some of your goals are. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, building wealth is a muscle. It's literally like working out.
Yeah.
The more you do it, the more confident you become.
Yep.
And once you start to see the commas in the bank account, mm-hmm. it really gives you that level of confidence where now you can then go and take more risk, mm-hmm. right? So you have to fix your money leaks that you have in your life. You have to learn how to recirculate that money, mm-hmm. right? So this is what I teach my framework, right? FRAME. Find your money leaks, recirculate the money. Once you build that confidence, now we can talk about getting you access to capital, which is what I know you do, okay. Because that access to capital is going to be the gasoline that you need to 10x your investments. Mm-hmm. But you shouldn't get that access before you've proven to yourself mm-hmm. that you're good with money.
Yep.
Right? And then M is multiply. So what vehicles are we going to use to take this access to capital that you have plus your savings? Where are we going to put this money to multiply it? Mm-hmm. And E is insure, right? So insure with the E. How are we going to ensure that this money not only is going to last for your lifetime, but also last for, last for generations, like you said. And we do that through different structures like trust, of course, financial planning, tax planning, real estate, and, you know, implementing real structure mm-hmm. That helps you save on taxes.
I want to make sure I got it. So it's the FRAME framework.
Mm-hmm.
F is?
Find and fix your financial leaks, your money leaks.
So get yourself right, pretty
get
much.
Get yourself together.
You're looking crazy. Get yourself right. Make sure you're good. Get your foundation right.
Yes.
R is?
R is recirculate.
Recirculate.
How am I recirculating the money that I already have, okay. right? And the first thing of that is paying yourself first.
Got you.
So take that money, put it in a bank account, take that money, put it in some life insurance. I bought my first property with life insurance that my mom sat me down at 18 years old to start this life insurance policy. I talked to the life insurance guy. I had no idea what he was talking about, but he's like, oh, you put $100, $200 in, a month. Next thing I know, I had $20,000 cash value in there. That was my deposit for me to buy my first investment property.
Yeah.
So how are you recirculating the money that you already earn mm-hmm. in your life? Mm. That's R.
And then A is access to capital.
Yes.
M is multiply. E is
insure. Yes.
Can we talk? I want to dive into my arena a little bit. Can we talk about the A for a quick second?
Let's talk about it.
Access to capital. What has your experience been when you're having these consultations and conversations with people around just wealth building strategy and planning around capital? Because from my experience, I think the big misconception is that the mindset has to be there first before they get the capital, because some individuals look at the credit and the capital they're getting as their money, when in actuality, you and I both know mm-hmm. it's not. It's a tool to get your own money.
Right.
Has that been your experience as well? And if so, how do you kind of talk people off that ledge? Like, no, you're not about to get this $20,000 and go spend it at the Louis store and Gucci. Like, we're going to be responsible and make sure this goes in the right places.
Yeah. So typically when people are coming to me for capital, it's big money.
Okay.
Right. And so they're investors already.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't work with a lot of, getting access to capital for people that are like new, mm-hmm. newer into investing. So I do like some private money. Mm-hmm. So the people that are coming to me for capital, they typically have a vehicle already mm-hmm. and they want that vehicle to grow.
Mm.
Yeah.
From your experience, do you think that capital is for everyone? Because there are some people, like, for example, obviously, everyone knows Dave Ramsey. He's like the king of stay away from debt. Ooh.
Yeah.
Is that, I don't know if that's a bad ooh or that's a good
ooh. That's a bad ooh, because I just think that, you know, like I said, personal finance is personal.
Right.
So we can't take this man's mm-hmm. who has been privileged for generations, mm-hmm. who is starting off with millions, or maybe he started off with nothing.
Okay.
But even his face card is going to give him, you know, is going to be more generous to him. So okay. I don't think that we can take advice from, you know, people who aren't where you are or where you've been or where you're coming from
okay.
and doesn't know where you're going. Right. Because I do think capital is having access to capital is leverage. Mm-hmm. Because like I mentioned, I mean, let's just say the average person in America makes $50,000. Even if they're saving 10% of their money a year, that's $5,000. How long is it going to take for them to get $100,000 in the bank? 20 years? How quickly can you get somebody access to $100,000?
Same. If their stuff is together, within a couple of days. Sometimes same day if we're going to the banks directly.
Same day.
Yeah.
I've gotten clients millions of dollars for real estate purchases in less than a week, mm-hmm. right? So we're all starting from different points. I don't, you know, debt free is not the way for me.
Debt free is not the way for me. Okay.
Because I think that it gives, you know, it allows you to have leverage. Now you do need to learn and all of that, and you know, there's bankruptcy. Listen, our president filed bankruptcy many times, mm-hmm. right? This is a part of business. And I think it's something that, you know, as Black entrepreneurs and professionals, we have to just get more comfortable and not being so emotionally tied to what happens with our money. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. I had to recover emotionally and I didn't know, right? I'm the money girl. I teach people about money. I help them take the emotions out of their money.
Yeah.
But when I took my first six-figure loss, it was a lot for me because I was just so used to being a winner. I was so used to winning. I was so used to producing. I was so used to things naturally happening and coming to me easily.
Yeah.
So when I took that first six-figure loss, I was like, oh, God. Mm. Okay, well, you're telling me that's not for me, but you could have whispered.
Yeah, you have to scream. Like, yo, get out of there. It's time to go.
You could have whispered it a little bit. But you know, it took me through a journey, which I now help my clients with. You can't attach your identity to the money that you make. Like money is just money. It is a tool. Mm. And just because you take a loss doesn't mean that you're a loser or you lost, mm-hmm. right? You actually learned through that lesson. And so that was in real estate. And I've been joking that I've had to recover. That was like a bad relationship, me and real estate. Mm.
Are you able to talk about what happened? Like what caused the loss? If you don't mind me asking.
Yeah, no, I don't mind at all. So when this is a great segue and a great conversation because I watched the interview with you and Lala. And
Adelette.
She is the securities attorney out of Miami. I love Lala.
Incredible.
And she actually funded my real estate deal. So that's so funny. So she actually helped me purchase my first property. Not my first property, but I was doing like a really big, it was my first six-figure budget that I was managing for my real estate project. But she said something so profound. She said that we always, you know, once we become successful, we try to then go and build other businesses and do other things, mm-hmm. right? Where I'm an accountant, I've been an accountant for 20 years. I just need to focus on how can I grow this business and doing it better and getting more clients, increasing my price, offering more value. That is where you should be focusing. When you are a professional, you have to lock in on what that one thing is that mm-hmm. you do very well and take that to the moon.
Yeah.
And then start investing in other things. I would say that I probably prematurely started investing in other things because there was so much happening and coming in. So I was investing in businesses. I was investing in other opportunities. I was doing some lending with my own personal money. And then I said, well, let me invest in real estate. And so managing all of that, managing my own personal business, managing these other businesses and these other relationships, and then also having to go through the learning curve of real estate, it was just a lot. So mm-hmm. I purchased a property for maybe like $250. I put about $250 into it and the market turned. So we were originally planning to sell the property for like $800. Mm-hmm. And then the market turned. It slowed. Well, everything went, all of our materials went super high. So we were $100,000 over budget. And then instead of being able to sell it for $850, well, we just couldn't sell it. So I'm $500,000 into this property, a couple hundred out of my own pocket, right? So I did get some funding, right? I got a portion of it funded from a private money lender, but they want to get paid and I want to get paid. Mm. Like I don't put my own six figures into this deal.
Yep.
But couldn't sell the property. Market turned and, you know, I had to just eat the loss. I had to just eat the loss, because for a while I was just paying interest on this on the property as it was just sitting, and that was further eating into money that I could have been investing in other places.
So
I think that, you know, we think about these seven streams of income. And, you know, what I've learned now that I'm wiser is that you want to go seven layers deep in your business that you're, you know, comfortable in and have knowledge in. You want to go seven layers deep in building out streams of income. So now we have services, we have digital products, we have referral, we have affiliate, right? So you find seven streams in one space and build out the system of cash flow, right? We've been taught that cash is king, but really cash flow is king. Because if that cash flow slow up and the bills keep coming, somebody's got a problem.
So
that was my experience, but I'm healed over that, and I'm ready to get back investing in real estate, because I think that if I just took the loss and didn't try again, it wouldn't be a lesson. It would just be a loss.
Yeah. I think, and you could let me know if this is your experience. From my experience, I think a lot of times why we struggle with like just staying focused on one thing in entrepreneurship is because I think the reality of building wealth and building business is that once you're in it after a certain period of time, it kind of gets boring. So you kind of get to a point where it's just like, and I think this is important for the audience to hear
it
too.
It is.
Like,
no, because wealth is boring.
It's monotonous. It's you doing the same thing over and over and
it's
over.
It's literally you just saving money over time.
That's it.
If you put this money away for 20 years, you are going to have more money than someone who didn't do it for the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. You are so right.
Yeah. And a lot of times, usually when you see people who get caught up in shiny object syndrome, is they fall on one or two sides of the coin. It's either you got bored doing the thing you were really good at, you're like, let me go ahead and try something else. Or you reach like a point of friction in the thing that you were building. You're like, oh, this may not be for me. And it's just like, no, this is a part of it. Like, you just have to weather the storm. You're just like, let me go ahead and do another thing. And then, you know, like what you talk, it happens to everybody. Nobody's is what's the word I'm looking for?
Nobody. Exempt.
There you go. Thank you. Nobody's exempt from it. But that has been my experience up until this point. Every time I've heard somebody bump their head against something that they weren't supposed to be doing, 9.9 times out of 10, was like, yo, I got bored doing the thing I was doing. Instead of asking myself, like, yo, how do I make more money in this?
It's so true. It's so true. I had been doing taxes for, you know, 10, 15 years. Yep. And I'm like,
what
this
else is there
boring.
To do? Yeah, what else is there to
this
do?
This is boring. I'm going to get my real estate license. I'm going to, you know, try this new thing, because especially as women, right, we're so creative. We want to birth things.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're so used to just doing that and it happening so easily, when you take a loss like that or something doesn't work, it can change your concept of, you know, well, did I lose it? Like, did I lose something? Like, am I still the same person? Do I still got it like that? You know what I'm saying? So it can be a confidence. It can, you know, knock your confidence a bit. But like I said, I'm healed from it.
You are healed.
And I'm excited for my next real estate investment.
There you go.
Yeah.
I want another, we're in the conversation of just wealth building and things of that sort. I want to talk about another commonly touched on topic, more specifically within our community, and get your take on it, life insurance. Because I feel like when I was growing up, my dad was, and probably still is, like, was vehemently against it. Like, every time I would bring it up, I would just be like, hey, why don't you have a life insurance policy? He's like, well, it's not really life insurance, it's death insurance, because y'all don't get paid. Y'all get paid when I'm not here. I'm like, well, I think that's the point. Like, we supposed to just like, listen, I don't want to talk about this no more. I'm like, all right, okay. But now knowing what I know about, like I have my policy set up. Everyone who I'm close to has their policy set up. But there's always been like, once again, like a split in the middle where it's just like, I feel like people within our community, you have people who understand it and got it.
Mm-hmm.
And other people who are like with most wealth building tools, like, oh, it's a scam. I don't know. Is this, is that? And it's like, bro, it's $20 a month to protect you and your family.
Yeah.
Where does your stance when it comes to how we should be approaching understanding life insurance?
Yeah. So I think life insurance is the most slept on wealth building tool, especially for our community, because there has been so much misinformation and miseducation about it. We look at life insurance as like the slimy guy coming to your kitchen table to sell, right? That used to be what life insurance was, right? That's what we thought about it. And, you know, they just want to come and collect their check.
Yep.
And yeah, if you're only paying $20 a month, unfortunately, it is death insurance. But in 2026, there are some amazing policies out there that allow you to actually use these these vehicles to build wealth. And like I mentioned, when I was 19, my mom sat me down. I started investing $100, $150 a month. And then that grew to $200 a month, then $250 a month. And when I moved to Atlanta, I had a nice pot to pay down debt and purchase my first property. So life insurance is literally the cheat code to your first million. Because if you're looking to build net worth and build something generational, you could literally go and purchase a $20 a month policy and increase your net worth $1 million. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think it's a underutilized tool, especially for high income earners. Mm-hmm. So I'll talk about a couple things that I do differently with life insurance that maybe not, you know, the average financial professional would do, because I'm an accountant first. So some of the strategies that I help my clients implement, you know, high income earners, entrepreneurs. And I mean, even if you're a working individual and you are high income, you can become a part-time entrepreneur and still have access to these retirement vehicles and invest way more than the $7,500 that IRAs allows you to invest, right? So we utilize executive bonus plans and structures for entrepreneurs, where you can put away six figures every single year. Mm-hmm. That's a tax deduction for your business. And it's also adding $1 million to your net worth every single year and protecting, like, protected $1 million to your net worth. So we do that through the executive bonus, where let's just say your business has earned, you know, a lot more money than you knew it would. So typically, in order to do this, all you have to do is really pin yourself a check. You pin yourself a check on December 31st, just like everyone wants to go out and buy a G-Wagon on December 31st because they want to figure out, hey, how can I spend more money and get a tax write-off? I hate that people want to go and, you know, spend $200,000 on a truck, but won't take that $200,000 and invest it in a policy for themselves where they'll get instant, well, not instant access, but you can get literally access to that $200,000 on January 7th. Because if you structure these policies properly, you'll have access to it in 7 days.
I mean, diving more into that, we talked about, like, you kind of addressed it there about, like, the misinformation. When we're having this conversation of wealth building, you hear these stories from time to time of people who work with these consultants, these advisors, and these experts, and then they come out of it with these horror stories of, like, I gave so-and-so $50,000 of my money because I thought they were going to help me, they were going to invest it for me and teach me how to do these things, and I ended up losing all of it. Have you seen a lot of any of those stories come across your table, and why do most people end up getting themselves caught up in these kind of situations?
Yeah, like I said, we are so stuck on instant gratification. And I mean, I've been invited to those tables to invest $50,000, $100,000 into these funds. And they're like, hey, we're getting 20% a day. We're getting 50% in a month. So, okay, so you're telling me if I give you $50,000, then you can give me back $75,000 next month? Well, no, it doesn't quite work like that, right? So there's always stipulations, but we are so, wealth is boring. We're so used to this instant gratification. We think that everything has to come quickly, that those numbers sound good, right? And most people don't want to do the boring work of setting up the structure and, hey, take that $100,000, put it in this guaranteed policy over here. It's going to guarantee you six figures. It's going to guarantee your family seven figures. We don't like the guarantees for some reason. The risk and the thrill, it ties back to our emotions, right? Most people are looking for a fix. We're looking for dopamine. And sometimes it can come through those risky investments. But yeah, no, I've seen it. I've been invited to those tables. And I had to, it actually changed my mind and helped me reframe how I thought about money, right? Because my girlfriend said, well, yeah, you can come and you can invest, but it's a minimum of $100,000. And I said, okay, it made me realize that I wasn't comfortable just giving someone $100,000 of my own money. So for me, I had to do the work to say, okay, I need to have enough money to where I'm comfortable just being able to give someone $100,000 to risk for me. That means mm-hmm. I don't have enough money because I don't feel comfortable doing it, right? So that was on that was one side of the coin. And then the other side was, why do I think that I need someone mm-hmm. to take this money and invest it when I know that I have all these tools here mm-hmm. and these are guaranteed, right? So, of course, I went the safer route and invested my own money.
Yep.
But, yeah, no, I mean, the thing about investments and business and anything, there's a 50-50 chance.
Hey, man.
You got a 50-50 chance that you're going to win mm-hmm. and a 50-50 chance that you're going to learn.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah, you're going to learn hard. It's, I think that's one of the best lessons I'm happy I learned early on. Just about like the number one rule of investing with anything is you, if you're not comfortable losing it, don't invest it.
Exactly. That's, and that was, yeah, that was my mindset. Like I can't comfortably just lose $100,000 right now. So I'm going to go and take this and invest in myself because at least I can learn the lesson.
Yep.
Of losing it than yep. just giving it to you and not even knowing what happened.
There you go.
Yeah.
I want to shift gears here. You have a publication, Black Wealth Weekly. What made you decide that you wanted to start creating content and community through a magazine specifically around Black wealth?
Yes, yes. So, you know, Atlanta has been the spark of that for me. I've been in Atlanta for over a decade now. And just watching, you know, watching Black people just come together and build and grow, it was such a beautiful thing. It's something that I wasn't used to, especially coming from the North. So I'm mm-hmm. from New Jersey. And I always said, you know, I feel like in New Jersey and most other places, right, are very white. And it, you know, being in those environments and especially me, I went to private school where I was the only Black girl in my entire graduating class. So, you know, in those environments, you're taught to like exist and, you know, kind of just get through. But in Atlanta, it is such a mecca for Black excellence and, and support. I felt like the revolution had to be televised, right? Mm. Like I said, I've been a financial activist at heart for my entire career. And so, you know, because I was so close to a lot of what has been built over the last 10, 15 years, I'm like, somebody has to tell these stories. Mm. And then also, my aunt has a magazine, shout out to Impact Magazine, which she's been doing for 30 years. So she helped me launch. You know, nothing gets done without the team. Mm-hmm. But she helped me launch. And yeah, I think it's super important for us to have positive Black stories out there because it can give the next person an idea on what wealth could look like for them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I told you this story, but when I was a kid, I wanted to be a doctor. But because I didn't have any Black doctors in my family or that my I knew of, it wasn't something that I really thought I could do. Mm-hmm. So I think representation is important. And I truly believe that, you know, once you're exposed, you can't be unexposed.
Yep.
So my goal with the publication is just to shine a light on people who are doing extraordinary things in their own light and just honor them for the things that they're doing and building and helping other people along the way.
As you're putting this content out through your magazine, your business and everything else that you're putting out into the marketplace, what would you say is the biggest mindset shift that you would hope our people start to have around money going forward?
Yeah, I think the biggest mindset shift that I would like to leave if I, you know, had to leave a legacy is that you know, you deserve wealth, right? You deserve to be wealthy. You deserve to be rich. And you will get anything that you desire as long as you believe.
And at this point, what would you say is your North Star? Because you've done a lot. I mean, you've been in this business for several years now. You've climbed many a mountains in your time. What are you still chasing at this point in your journey?
I just want to help more people. I just want to help more people build, you know, their whatever their North Star is, right? When it comes to financial, because it takes money to build and influence and move and protect, right? So I do think that money is important, but more importantly is the mindset, right? Yeah. So I want to build, you know, just an army of people who are financially strong in their mind. Because once you have that, you know, if you get access, you get the resources, you have the structure, the world is yours.
As we start to close, my final question for you, if you were sitting in your seat right there, and sitting here across from you was Dr. Shaniqua Nicole 10 years into the future. And she only had 30 seconds to speak to you. What do you think she would say?
So my future self is speaking to me now?
10 years in the future. She got 30 seconds to speak to you. What do you think she would say?
Hey, girl, you did it. You did it. You stuck to the script. You pushed through the imposter syndrome. You pushed through your failures, divorce, rebuilding your life. And you did it. You're so happy. I'm so proud of you. You're amazing. Your community is blossoming. Look at what you've built. Keep going.
I love that. Dr. Shaniqua Nicole, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate you immensely. I know we have to get you out of here. Your camera here. Let the people know where they can find you and what you have going on.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much for having me, Marvin. This was amazing. It was so much fun. But I'm Dr. Shaniqua Nicole, guys. I want to invite you to work with my team. If you are looking to build your 7 or 8 figure legacy, we want to talk to you. Whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you aspire to be an entrepreneur, I'm opening up my books just for Marvin. I'm opening up my books just for you guys today at ineedataxplan.com because you need a tax plan. Mm-hmm. I'm Dr. Shaniqua Nicole, the Millennial Money Maven. You can get your free tax plan at ineedataxplan.com. You can follow me on Instagram at Money Maven Club. I would love your support with the publication Black Wealth Weekly. It is a magazine and podcast, and we are everywhere at Black Wealth Weekly. And that's where you can find us.
I love it. I love it. And I appreciate you immensely. But most importantly, I appreciate you guys. And if you haven't already, what are you doing? Take a second. Take a minute. Take an hour out of your day right here, right now to show this episode some love. Subscribe to the channel. Tell a friend to tell a friend to come back and rewatch it again. And make sure. And the website is what? One more time.
ineedataxplan.com.
We will put it in the description for you guys to go ahead and get access to it. And as always, family, I'm your host with the most, Marvin Francois. That is the always incredible, never indelible Dr. Shaniqua Nicole. You guys have been good. We've been great. This has been amazing. Thank you all. God bless. And until next time, peace.
Peace.